And so today we have,
organized social
yeah, so today we have our new postdoc, Chris Wendler, who's going to talk about a new approach for trying to understand this great mystery of diffusion models and know so much. And we know so little about what they're doing. So I'm really looking forward to hearing what he's found.
All right. I'm looking forward to explain a bit. So I will start like a bit jamming on your anecdote that like research is kind of also teaching. This project initially started as a class project in EPFL's multimodal course. I don't know the exact name. So Slava and a colleague of him, Vyacheslav, shortcut Slava, they implemented SAEs on SDXL Turbo, and they had something that looked kind of cool. But like when he came to me, his interventions kind of didn't influence the generation at all. So they started out with the classical settings that you find in the anthropic blog posts, like expansion factor 64. Yeah. And he was like, can I do an internship with you? So I asked around, and I was really lucky. I found Shalar, who had some money for this project. So we were able to hire this really amazing student, like he's a force of nature, and gave him the, you know, platform to execute this project.
Hi, can and someone help? Like a student is trying to get in. Her name is Gixio.
Oh, so yeah, I can help.
Will talk.
Oh,
wait. I can help.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. So we have a big team.
What's her name? Gixio.
Gixio.
Okay, I will just continue.
Put your face.
So the
chair forward a little bit. Great. Hmm? It's just he's trying to judge me.
Yeah, we have Mikhail. Mikhail, he always joined my reading groups and is really interested in interpretability and in AI safety. He was really interested in this interpretability project as well. Justin is our diffusion expert. He literally wrote up the entire diffusion math for me because I thought I needed it in the paper. We ended up throwing it out completely, sadly. But we have it somewhere. Amazing. Bob, really amazing prof, and Shalar, who made all of this possible. Yeah. So let's get into it. This is something that you can do. So here we turned on like an animal feature on the face of this model. And you kind of can get like some hybrid in between human and animal. And you can also get, I mean, as you change the feature strength, it will interpretably affect the image. So I think like most of you know what sparse autoencoders are, but like we are gonna do like a very brief recap. So it was considered an interpretability breakthrough. I guess people were really excited. Now finally people are like getting more sober about it and are like, wait a minute. But like with this method, you can in an unsupervised way find like seemingly very interpretable directions in your intermediate results of your neural network forward pass. And like for language models, they have been scaled up to the largest language models, and Anthropic trained some of them on Claude, and they found like this famous Golden Gate Bridge feature. So the plot is quite overloaded, but like focus on just the activation level on the bottom. You can see like if you have a high activation level, if you look at the examples, they are about the Golden Gate Bridge, very specifically about the Golden Gate Bridge, independent of the modality, and also at lower positive activation levels, this is like a bridgey like feature. It gets excited by bridges. But why bother? Why do we need even to learn these interpretable features? Like, couldn't we just look at neurons? So we have like this kind of ancient insight basically since the beginning of deep learning, because this is when people started optimizing over the input image, over the image domain in order to excite neurons, that neurons are kind of polysemantic a lot of times. So the same neuron can respond to different things. It can respond to dogs, but it can also respond to maces in this synthetic example here. And like recently, people came up with this superposition theory. Like it's more like a hypothesis. It's not really a theory that makes predictions like theories that you have in physics. They came up with this explanation that could be underlying this polysemanticity phenomenon. And it basically addresses the following puzzle. If you have only two neurons, how can you represent five features? Right? So two is kind of smaller than five, so you probably are not going to represent like a feature with a neuron. But if you, you know, put vectors onto the 2D plane, you can kind of put an arbitrary number of vectors there. And as long as the features don't co-occur all of the time, this is where the sparsity comes in, you are able to like nicely represent your five features most of the time. And that's called superposition, basically putting the features into the space in a non-orthogonal way. And the idea of the sparse autoencoder is now, hey, given that, you know, usually in the internet you have more than five concepts, more concepts than neurons, maybe like language models and stuff do something like this. So maybe we can try to learn to invert like this process and convert like the activation vectors into some representations where the features are monosemantic. And this is the SAE. So you take in your activation into an encoder, you blow it up into some larger representation. So in this synthetic example, we know the optimal value, it is five. Usually you don't know that, which is a big problem. And then you just optimize your encoder-decoder pair, you know, to faithfully represent the activations under the sparsity penalty. And the idea is like from observing a bunch of activations, you can now get like these true features in this idealized setting. Maybe these features are the right abstraction in order to get monosemantic interpretable features that also causally affect the forward pass. And like for language models, this has been very strong and useful, I guess. So the student Slava was asking whether he can do this for diffusion models as well, because they are much cooler. And like just a brief reminder, diffusion is this thing where you add noise and then you train a neural network to remove the noise. And recently we also have like few step diffusion models that can do this in between 1 to 4 steps. So how does a diffusion model work? You give in like some noise and a text prompt. In STXL Turbo, you have a UNet architecture. Like I made a very simple image here, and out comes like an image corresponding to the caption. And I mean, this would be the one-step generation process that we focused on. So we are kind of cheating a little bit. So we removed like this multiple time steps layer of complexity that you have in actual diffusion. So maybe you can think of it as a GAN. Our SAEs also work in the multi-step setting, as I will show in the demo. So we train SAEs on the updates performed by these blocks. So here I have like a more detailed diagram. Like this is actually how the UNet works. And each of these blue blocks is actually a whole transformer, like a transformer with self-attention layers where the batches of noise, or the representations of batches of noise are allowed to attend to each other, and cross-attention layers where they are allowed to attend to the text prompt. And you also have MLPs in there. And yeah, so we focus on these blocks that contain like this a lot of transformer layers. And
could you go back? So yeah. Each of those down projections are, you said those are each transformer layers?
Well,
this is a traditional unit. Right,
I mean, the whole diagram is a unit.
Right.
But like if you zoom into one of these blocks, like say, let's say down 1-0, that's a transformer consisting of multiple layers, containing multiple set attention layers and also sometimes multiple cross attention layers. And
gotcha.
Wait, so the answer to that question, where to train the SEs, was that part of this slide or next slide?
This presentation is kind of not polished because we keep getting rejected. And so I don't have a good reason to polish.
Okay.
But I will come back to this slide in a bit. So where to train the SEs, right? So we are in academia. We kind of don't have infinite compute, so maybe we can be smart about it. So the first thing that we tried was just go in and turn off a bunch of layers, right? And see how this affects the generation. And you can see like not all blocks are created equal. The ones in the middle kind of have like a big impact. So, and because we are trying to fix like this causality aspect, because the student already has SAEs, we will zoom in on those. And
he uses concatenation, right? For the down blocks going to the up blocks that are the same size. This type of unit, because some units do different things. So you concatenate?
You skip. You have like a residual connection from the input.
Right, but is the residual connection, is that concatenation?
No, that's addition.
That's addition. Okay.
Yeah. We identified these blocks. We also ran some other prompts. So here we just turn off the update performed by this block. So that's the forward pass where, like, yeah, you just don't update the residual stream with the update performed by this one transformer block. It was really funny because we did this, and afterwards I was going to my colleague Peter, who does the data engineering or did the data engineering at Stability and now is at Leonardo, and he was like, "Oh yeah, I know this." You know, like there is this YouTube video where this guy calls this the composition layer, and this other layer he calls the style layer. So there was a guy training like low rank updates on these different layers, and he has like multi-hour YouTube videos. He's completely like a machine and amazing. And yeah, I wish to know the things that he knows. But anyways, so that's this video. And
wait, so quick question. So in your figure, you have block dot attention something. Go previous slide.
With the images, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So these are like, I forgot. Are you still training essays or if this
okay,
is
so the
this is just a zero ablation or something like that?
No, here we just set these blocks to zero.
Zero ablation.
Yeah. So the naming in the figure is a simplified naming. So these are the actual block names. In this figure with the images, these are the actual block names. In the diagram figure, these are shortcuts.
So this is what happens if the output of these blocks were not summed in.
Yeah. So. Okay. Yeah. So you would basically bypass it by going along this. This line.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris, I have a question.
Yeah.
So this was mentioned a couple of times. You said composition in these models. So can you explain what that composition means?
It composes the elements of the scene. So this guy can literally create a cat. So I will show this in the interventions. So gotcha. It is not clean cut and very hand wavy calling this composition.
Mm-hmm.
So it's by no means an accurate characterization, but like if you turn on in this layer, like a cat and a dog feature, you will end up with a cat and a dog in your image. And if you do this at other layers, you will maybe locally, you know, turn on some hairiness feature, or something like that. But we will get to that, I think, later.
Awesome, thank you.
So this is where we train. And yeah, just some more details that are not really written on the slide. This F thing here, like if you do like a single example, a single noise, right? Then in this, so we are kind of in the smallest spatial resolution of the unit here. So if I remember correctly, these were like 16 by 16 by 1280 tensors. And we train, like we feed in the 1280 vectors into our SAE. So we don't do anything that would like make similar spatial locations.
So sorry, you vectorize the 16 by 16?
Yeah, but
and then you...
Yeah, I'm saying we have weight sharing across the spatial locations.
So he doesn't vectorize the 16
by 16. Okay, I see. Yeah.
Yeah. So we don't say, look, you should... we don't bake in this prior assumption that maybe would be reasonable of like neighboring things should be similar. But this is the first work, so I think it's a fair thing to do. This just makes everything super easy on the engineering side. So we do a bunch of forward passes. We spam our hard drive on the cluster with like 50 terabytes of tensors. And now we can iterate over some SAE parameters to get some config that actually does something. And this was the first intervention that worked. So I think this was maybe at ICLR last year or ICML, I don't remember. Slava sent me this picture where he turned on the ball feature in the compositional layer. And it actually causally affected the generation. So this was really cool. And before that, like when we had like a larger expansion factor, we would need to turn on like 17 or something ball features, and then we would create a gray blob. and now, you know, now we have this, which is really cool.
So if you like triggered that ball feature, and the face looks like a ball, how would it differ when I would have a direct prompt where I would say, like add a ball feature along with the face, or I will compose to diffusion inference where in one I will have something with the ball and another I will have something with the face. How would the generation differ?
Yeah, yeah. So you're asking like, how close can I get to this result by using prompting?
Right.
I don't know. I think that would be an amazing experiment to run, and maybe we can add this to our paper or to our to-do list. That's a question that I keep having all of the time when people do these things. Yeah, but like I think we will have some features that, to me, I would be really surprised if you could do that with prompting. But maybe you could do it with layer-specific prompting, you know, where you have different prompts for the different blocks. Yeah, let me just note that down.
Another strength of this approach is also that you can continuously vary the strength of this intervention.
Right.
I wouldn't know how to like get prompts for each individual image.
Right. But they have some hacks that you can write like a word and then colon a number, and then this is kind of you multiply the embedding or something of this word, and you kind of can emulate this. So another thing why the image domain is really amazing, David knows the most about this. Like people have done everything. You cannot imagine what people have done on GANs. Like the stuff that we are doing with language models is baby stuff. People have done everything. Like, anyways, so you impossible to come up with anything new. Honestly.
Wait, could you go to the previous slide? Quick clarification question.
Yes.
So here you train three different SAEs for three different layers, right?
Four.
Four? Oh, sorry, yeah, four.
Yeah.
Okay.
But so, spoiler, only three of these layers, I would say, have, I mean, they all specialize, but only three are really like interpretable if you hold them to this standard that features should react, or they should be on similar looking dataset examples. And then they also should causally influence the generation
mm-hmm.
in a similar, in a way that matches.
Okay.
So then only three of these blocks are easy to interpret. But the middle block, like Slava, managed to pull out some features that are really cool and like, but they are so hard to interpret. Like, they do something, like when you look at them, some of them, they do something really that makes sense, that does something with the perspective and with surfaces in the scene, but they are kind of hard to find, and it's super hard also to label. But like, so they do something. Just okay, we get three really interpretable types of SAE features, and like this one mysterious one. Yeah.
Which one is the mysterious one? The up or
S? It's this one.
Mid one.
Yeah.
Okay.
The mid one is a mystery to me.
Okay. Sorry, one more question. So the ball feature that you actually steer.
That is here.
That is here, and that's only there. It's
just
like one dimension.
That's one vector.
Just one vector, yeah.
Yeah, we just, like, we learn, like, we have, like, maybe in this example, we had an expansion vector of two. So we go from 1,180 to 2,000 something.
Okay.
And then we select like one vector. Yeah, yeah. So that was active during a forward pass with a dog playing with a ball. Like we look at what is active in the ball. And then we grab this guy and add it.
Okay, makes sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, I also have some questions on the same slide. So you train SAEs on the outputs of those modules?
Yeah, on this F thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
so it's kind of a bit confusing where the red arrow is pointing, but yeah. So it would be here, you know, like the stuff that comes out of the down block.
Okay, so not on the residual stream, like
no, not on the residual stream. Yeah.
Okay. And another thing.
So something that we should maybe also try, but like everybody's doing something else now.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And another thing is that what are the shape of these lower resolution images?
That is 16 by 16 by 1280.
This is still a two-dimensional image, right?
Yeah. I mean,
like two-dimensional
it's with a ton of channels. Yeah.
With a ton of what?
Channels.
Channels. Okay. And you blow it up by how many?
Just a factor of two.
Just a factor of two.
Yeah,
and that gives you interpretable results.
Well,
like just the
smaller,
four,
right? the smaller your expansion factor, the stronger your interventions.
Yeah. Okay.
In our experience, so we were like, "This is bullshit." The 64, like, I mean, we don't really care about capturing all of the features.
The smaller your like, expansion factor, the stronger the intervention. That kind of like makes me think you should be able to get the strongest intervention by directly messing with the channels, right?
But
directly messing with the channels, not even training with
that. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, no, because you can have 0.5.
You can have 0.5 or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you ever try that?
Oh, yeah. Slava did 0.5, and then I was like, this is weird. Like, we shouldn't put this into the paper. People would just be confused. But the 0.5 ones are...
Looks even better.
I mean, they are causally strong, you know? Yeah. I maybe they are not as monosemantic because you have, again, this combinatorial argument. Right.
Well, I mean, but empirically, it's a question. I think the argument is one thing, but I think the experience is the question. Is
empirically, they are great.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
They're great, and you can achieve the
empirically. Like, one other thing that we did before training the SAE is like to just get a feeling of which blocks do what was also activation patching. And that also, like, in the middle, we patched like a dog head. like the activations that were in a dog head, we patched it into a cat forward pass. And at the down block, we can get a cat dog. Like a chimera. How do you say this? Mm-hmm. A chimera animal. And I mean, obviously, as you go up the layers, the more this looks like literally going into paint and cropping a part of the image and like, you know, copy pasting it there. Yeah, so this was really fun.
How robust is this ball behavior to the prompts? Like, does it work?
So the, yeah, so that's a great question. So the down 2-1 thing, the composition, the thing that we call composition layer, the thing that actually creates elements in the scene, that one is super duper, that one doesn't care about what is the prompt. But for example, the up 0-0 block, that one we found is like really, it needs the relevant context to do something. But if the relevant context is there, it is also strong. Like, so that's, we call it a detail layer. And also like same for the up 0-1, that one is a style, we call it style layer. That one also is better. I mean, that one will also generalize wildly across prompts, but like that one will really locally change like the texture and stuff of whatever is the object there. So, I will show you hopefully some of this in the demo.
Chris, I have a question.
Yeah.
What's the input shape for your SAE?
That is a vector of length 1280.
So that so means you are assuming that you're not assuming any spatial.
Yeah. So we do this simplification. Yeah.
So do you think that if you had no wait. Yeah, so if you're doing linear SAEs, would that still capture, like, it seems like it's capturing some spatial information, like you could transform a person into a ball.
Yeah, so I mean, like, one thing that is really weird and that I learned about this unit is in this architecture, they actually don't use positional encodings or anything. But by virtue of how the convolutional layers and so on work, the model can still learn positional encodings. So right. You can probe out literally. I did that and I had it in the paper, but then my co-authors removed it because they found it's not interesting. You can probe out like the spatial locations from these 1280 vector. You can literally probe out, I am at position IJ. So all of these layers are position aware.
Right. And I think that's like really interesting where you didn't use any spatial processors like convolutions. Yeah. Just by looking at the channels, you were able to get spatial features. I think that's very interesting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think we will see more of that, I hope. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. David?
Oh, when you do the intervention,
yeah,
or maybe you're going to talk about how you do the intervention in future slides. I was just going to ask.
I think maybe in the demo, it will be very obvious.
Yeah. Are you doing the intervention on all 16 patches, or are you doing...
No, so we build a UI. So we do everything, but like we, the best thing that we can do...
The intervention.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have a UI, you can paint a mask, and then we just collect the indices that fall inside of this.
Great.
The mask. But so one thing that worth noting, right? So you like, in this idealist way of thinking, where you are like, oh, the SAE literally is supposed to discover the true features, you could just set the SAE coefficients, right, to do the intervention and replace the output with what comes out. We don't do that because our SAEs actually have a kind of large approximation error compared to also what you see in language models.
So you just add the vectors.
Yeah, we add the vectors. So we circumvent this issue of having actually a bad reconstruction. Just an important detail for working with SAEs. And like the, I think SAE interventions is something that is not well understood also in language models. Like, especially in language models, I would say. Okay, so let's go and look at the layers, right? We did different types of visualizations. So here, to start, we just generate an image for this prompt, a cinematic shot of a professor's love wearing a tuxedo at a barbecue party or something. And the rows of this plot are like the five SAE feature indices corresponding to the SAE features, you know, that reduce the L2 error the most. And we plot like a heat map showing their coefficients. So red means this feature is very active somewhere. And blue means it is like a little bit active, and transparent means it is not active. And then we have like visualizations where we subtract the vector corresponding to this feature index with a multiplier that you can see in the column name. And that kind of influences the generation in like sort of like ablating, like semantically this looks like ablating the feature. And here you already notice some ugliness, I think, of what we are doing. Because like if the theory would be nice, ablating should be just setting this value to zero. But instead, to get like an ablation-like effect, we need to subtract it with a factor greater than one, right? And that, but then you see that, for example, the first row, the light chains disappear. The second row, also the light chains disappear, and also some of these tent shapes. The third row, you lose like your sloth animated face. And the last two rows, they do something with the tuxedo, I guess, but they are less nice. Then you can do the same thing, but just increasing the strength. And first row, I guess, the light chains pop out a bit more. Second row, you see there is like tents on top of the tents. And last three rows are more subtle. Then what we also can do on this block is we can turn the feature on the empty prompt. Like, so here we do a forward pass with the empty prompt, and we just turn at the down layer, we turn everything else off and this guy on. And so it also pulls out like the kind of matching concepts usually. And then we also have the dataset examples that also match.
I have a question.
Yeah.
You chose the features that minimize the loss or affect the loss the most.
Right. So because we are generating a prompt, right? Yeah.
Are these also the features that happen to activate highest?
Yeah. That's equivalent, right? In this. That's equivalent. Wait. I mean, it's
if my down projection is like a kernel, zero dimension, whatever.
Right. Okay. I think I explained it wrong. So if the down projection was orthogonal, it would be the same.
Yeah.
But it's not. So maybe it is just the features with the highest activations. Yeah. Highest SAE coefficients.
Nice.
And I mean, it will also be relevant to the loss.
Absolutely.
But yeah, not in this way that I was talking about it.
Okay.
Maybe we should put them side by side and check.
Another quick question. So yeah. Generally, what does the diffusion model generate on an empty prompt?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Turbo is actually kind of collapsed, as Rohit shows in his recent amazing work. That would be so cool if we could combine it with this, so we have better images. The empty prompt is usually like, it looks like a drawing of a landscape with a lot of brown. You have a little bit of grass. Sometimes you have a tree. Sometimes you have like a person-like thing in the middle. So it's definitely polluted by the features that are... So these visualizations are... You see how the features that we turn on mix with these brown tones and this painting style. Like, for example, here where you get like these drawings of this, I don't know, hamsters or whatever this is. Okay, so... This is the block that we call composition block, and we call it that because you kind of can connect a lot of the features with elements of the prompt, right? But by no means is this an accurate characterization of the block. But it helps to think about it. Are we good? Are we good with this block?
Mm-hmm.
Then I will...
On the data set examples, yeah. is this just from, you have a data set of many prompts and then you just generate a lot of things?
Yeah.
Is that
yeah? Those? So actually, so I wish the data set examples could be even better, but so we were kind of pragmatic in keeping things cheap. So we pre-computed a few hundred of million of prompts. Latents for prompts.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the 50 terabyte of latents on our mm-hmm. disk.
Mm-hmm.
But like to get these dataset examples, we actually only looked at the first 50,000 mm-hmm. or something in that ballpark. So maybe we don't cover the whole data
cool.
nicely.
And what was your source of prompts that you used to?
That was Koyo and Lion, I think.
Cool. So like yeah. training data sets.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that is my that this block. I had like a back and forth with this block. At the beginning, I found it kind of boring. At the end, it was my favorite block. So I ordered them here not by their order in the forward pass, but their how interpretable they are. Order. So this is the style layer. And I mean, there are so many things that are kind of cool to me in this layer. For example, you often have like this 2727 feature that kind of increases the illumination effect when you turn like crank it up. And when you subtract it, it has like, it makes things looking darker. And so the style layer is also still strong enough to do something on the empty prompt, right? So it will just make, it will create this texture like images if you turn it on the empty prompt. And also similarly on the first row, you have something that seems to be shadow-like, at least when it's on.
What's the opposite? Interesting.
Yeah, and they activate on different parts of the image, right? So this one is more on the left side here, and this one is more on the right side here. And then you have all sorts of other things. Like you also have like this light bulb texture, for example. And you have like this one, the last row, I think that should have a name, but I don't know what's the name for this, but...
it's like red versus blue.
Color temperature.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Color temperature, I think, yeah. That was the name that I was looking for.
Yeah, it's warm, cool.
daylight, indoor light.
Okay. So also like one comment, recently we had like this related work coming out that showed that SAEs also learn interpretable features on randomly initialized models, like without training, which is why I think the causality aspect that we have here is really important. So I highly, highly doubt that your randomly initialized unit can create images matching the, you know, interpretation of the feature. So this is like, this is the, to me, the key to making sure we don't do something trivial. You know, because like random, like people for many years used like random Fourier features and stuff to build their classifiers. So there's like, yeah, there's just this risk of fooling yourself. Okay, style block. And the last one that kind of is interpretable is like the detail block. Detail block doesn't do anything on the empty prompt, which is why these columns disappeared. And we have more dataset examples. But detail block still, if you do something in the relevant context, like the context of the prompt, you can get strong effects. Like detail block can also add some party decoration, or it also remove it. Detail block can nuke your mouth away in this fourth row. You just nuke the hole into it. But I mean, these interventions are hilariously strong, so we are really butchering around here.
Mm-hmm.
Do I understand correctly that you did this analysis on four blocks based on this YouTube video, or did you?
No, we found our blocks ourselves, but just people knew already that two of these blocks.
But my question is: Did you select these four blocks, or did you do it on the entire unit?
Yeah, yeah. So we are GPU. We were kind of GPU poor. Well, not really GPU poor, but like constrained, and we were like, we want to do as little training as possible and have as great interventions as possible. So we did these preliminary experiments to narrow down the blocks. Maybe someone should do it.
And the preliminary experiments are the zero ablation.
Zero ablation and activation patching. Basically intuition building about the forward pass.
I have a question.
Yes.
For your interventions, so do you just use the heat map to select the pixels that you're gonna intervene on?
Yeah.
Okay. It seemed like the rest of the images.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good sharp observation. I didn't mention this. Yeah, we use the heat map.
Cool.
To turn it on and off locally. Except for like this thing where we turn things on the empty prompt. There we just turn it on everywhere. Okay. Also the dataset examples match kind of the interpretation or the stuff that it is doing in the forward pass. And then we have like also this problem child block, where the interventions basically don't seem to do much, but like the dataset examples are very, very neat. The dataset examples look like you should be able to do something with this block, but yeah, we didn't manage to pull off like this is the block where literally like Slava, he spent like I think a ton of time, and he can pull out like a list of let's say 10 to 20 really interpretable like features that have a causal effect on the generation.
Would it be that you're just not using the prompts that have effect?
Yeah, but like, so I mean, these are the five most active features in the Tuxedo Professor's Log prompt. And now we are just locally cranking up and down the strength. And yeah, it warps the, it has some subtle effects that are really difficult to describe. Whereas, like, if I look at the dataset examples, like in the fourth row, I would say, this is the left boundary of an object. Or in the first row, I would say, this is the right side of a head. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And on the second row, I would say, this is the left side of a head. And then we also have some features that I would characterize as, like, this is the leftmost object. This is the rightmost object. And so on, like by looking at the dataset examples. But, yeah.
So, you know, so one of the things that we're finding in these transformers, right, Nikhil is like, you know, doing all the papers on this, is that a lot of the important features are not values.
They're pointers.
They're pointers.
Pointers.
And so is this a pointer layer that's laying down maybe pointers for the geometry of the scene that you've got? And so, you know, it has no effect to, like, maybe the intervention to try is you could, instead of amplifying things, you could try moving the pointers around to see if you can rearrange the scene or something like that.
Yeah, we should do different interventions.
Right.
Yeah. Good idea.
That's what you would do, right, Nikhil?
Yeah.
Move them around.
Switch left and right.
It's actually not too hard.
Switch the dog and the cat.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we should try it. Okay. So that's the layers. I'm sorry if this slide's not, I don't even know how much you see here. So I see it on my screen. So I don't know how horrible this part was.
No, looks good.
Yeah. So.
So one suggestion for presentation, just as a note, is that in the dissection work, we found that when we showed heat maps, it's really hard for people to read and understand in paper. So we just binarized the heat maps and show these little window things. So you can see, and there's a few of us who are using these little window visualizations in these kind of vision papers, where you just show where the highest activation. It's just easier to read.
You just remove the non-active part?
So you gray it out to like 70% gray, so that people can still see it if they want to. But then at 0% gray, there's this transparent window. You can even draw a border around the window or something like this. Say this is the area.
Actually, we have that.
Yeah. It's a little bit clearer visualization.
We do have that.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay, so so now we are turning features on a different context. And these are some of the early features that I found that are, so these are heavily cherry-picked, just as a warning, that like have a really cool and interpretable effect like across different prompts. So we sample a bunch of different random prompts from our data set, and I turn on these few features that I found. So the first one, I guess, is some comic feature. Second one, I tried to find the anime feature, but in the past I had some better anime features than this one, but this was the one that I found when I made the presentation. And the last feature I found when I generated pictures of an angry monkey. So that's somehow an evil character feature. So it grows, you know, the horns. So really cool stuff. Honestly, yeah. Oh, never mind. I'm sorry. Like, the left side was actually the dataset examples that have the feature, and now the right side is turning them on unrelated prompts. I'm sorry. So the first row is always the picture of a colorful model that I use the most to play around, and then we also loved the dog that plays with the ball. And the classroom I found just funny with the angry feature down there.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Have you played with the order of the prompt? Like, you change.
No, I didn't. But
okay. I was wondering if
you are referring to the text encoder being weak.
Maybe, or like if it has any effect.
On yeah. So actually, we are playing right now with the text encoders a bit in flux, and we found some cool stuff. But that's a good idea.
Maybe the features are there, and they might have very good activations, but just due to the order of the prompt, maybe one of the features is far from the end where the decoding takes place, and that's why you don't, although like the feature is there, but it's not getting activated because of the activation and the order and the position of those adjectives.
But like we are decomposing the update to the noise, right? So whatever was in the prompt, if the units, if the cross attention blocks wanted to attend to that, it's in our grid, right? So that was it's the difference of our work to the other works that do SAEs. Is we are literally doing it inside of the unit and on the visual features. So other people did it on text encoder, intermediate results. They did it on clip embedding vectors that you can use to condition some diffusion models. Those are, and the results are really amazing and were what motivated us to believe, like, that actually gave us the conviction that we also can get interventions that are like affecting the generation. Those are done by Gidis, who's a nice guy. He also was in meetings with us. So I have some more of this, and then I would like to do an interactive thing.
So did you attempt to sort of quantify interpretability?
I mean, yeah, of course.
And what kind of your method did you use to quantify it?
Yeah, so like the quantitative analysis, honestly, I found it very challenging. But like, so we were lucky we had this down layer that actually modifies the images in such a strong way that like even kind of dumb models like GPT 3.5 can label the features. So we auto annotated the down block, and we did the usual, we computed some of the usual scores of like, how specific is this feature? How sensitive is this feature, and how causal is this feature? You can find this in the paper. And we tried to make the point like more quantitatively that these layers are specialized to different things.
A related question.
But this was really hard and it's not super convincing.
So did you have a baseline that you compared to that you beat like a PCA decomposition of feature space or
something? We did a terrible job on that. We do have some baselines, we do, but they are kind of weaker than PCA.
Maybe just a neuron baseline.
I mean, like the baselines. I think that's really important.
If you're still going through peer review, like this kind of thing.
Yeah. It's just like we are resource bottlenecked.
Sure.
Currently, baselines, PCA. I mean, we obviously have this in our to-do list.
Yeah, or the neuron baselines. Yeah.
Another thing I wanted to ask, this is also related to baselines, but baselines for the causality effect.
We actually started looking at the neurons.
Cool.
Didn't go all the way. They were not great.
Which is good.
Yeah.
You can beat them.
So this is kind of like baselines for the causality effect. So you have found that these specific neurons, which turns on the anime neuron and the anime feature in the generation, right?
Yeah, or the horsiness.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the first row.
So let's say you tried to learn some sort of like a sparse but linear combinations of the feature of your SAE basis directions that you have found, and to that reflect that basically turns on that anime feature, like without selecting it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is the anime direction. I'm gonna turn it on.
Yeah.
How about you just learn it?
Yeah, yeah. So there is like this related work that does this for language models, right?
Yeah, there are lots of related works.
Yeah, yeah. Language models. Right. Yeah. So sure. Yeah.
So
but also like just not doing essays.
Sorry, what? Yeah.
Just not doing essays and learning them directly. Like Rohit did with the sliders.
Yeah, so
it works even better.
So then my question would be, like, let's say if something turns on anime features,
yeah,
is it actually the anime neuron or?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, so, well, I mean, I think like what we see here is that certain blocks lend themselves at least to more effectively learning certain. Like, if you want something to affect the style, you probably have an easier life to do that in this up 0-1 block,
okay,
right?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, that is something that we should try, yeah? Mm-hmm. I mean, I noticed with low-rank updates, you're actually quite flexible which exact parts of the attention you... I mean, some of these are even equivalent mathematically. Which of these parts you update, but like usually there people update all the layers.
Mm.
I think that's an interesting direction to localize the LoRa updates onto layers. And I mean, if the layers are specialized, this will kind of upper bound or what you can do. It's really a hard question, this, like, whether you found like the real thing. Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't have like super deep thoughts about that.
It's okay, thanks.
Yeah.
I was just wondering about your GPT 3.5 interpretability pipeline. Is it like you give it two images and then ask?
Oh, no, like we follow for closely the footsteps, I guess, of the Anthropic work, where you bin your images into different activation levels, and then you are like, look, here are like, I don't know, five or something, whatever we can afford.
For each feature.
Whatever prompt length we can afford.
Mm-hmm.
Here are five examples where it's not on. Here are examples where it is 10% on, 25%.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Please.
Explain it to me.
Yeah. And so the down block is the block where this kind of makes sense. But already the up 0-1, that is very interpretable. Like the models focus on the foreground object too much, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to introduce too much of like hand-holding, I think. Yeah. You don't want the auto-annotation pipeline to be prompted with like focus on the style and then afterwards make the claim, this is a style layer, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, we have that in the paper. Slava has the features annotations somewhere, but I think you don't even need them. You can just generate a prompt,
mm-hmm.
generate an image for a prompt, see which features were active there,
mm-hmm.
right? And play around with them in another prompt, which is what our app allows you to do.
I was wondering also, you have like, all these different layers.
Yeah.
How do they communicate?
That's we didn't get into that yet. That would be a really exciting direction, I think. Yeah. So we cited like Sam Mark's work like at three different locations in our paper, like so saying like, oh yeah, more advanced methods would be cool. You know, that kind of try to connect the features and future work, you know, should do that.
Nice.
And yeah, maybe you would find even wilder stuff there. So this is the same plot for the style layer. Just turned on everywhere, which is not how you should use the style layer, as I'm going to show you in a bit. And even more. So the funniest is like turning off the lion mane on the lion. Like when you then...
Oh, which one?
Yeah, you have like the main And then it just has like big cheeks.
Are those ears?
It's hard to see. Oh yeah, you can see like the lion's ears sticking out or something.
Yeah, yeah. So we're gonna see something in a higher resolution now. So assuming that we still have some time. So I guess I turned on the demo on our cluster now. Never mind. Mm-hmm. What's going on here? Oh, I also ran demo close. Great. That's a great way of doing your notebooks. All right, guys. So depending on how slow this is, we also have like a Hugging Face demo. It's just slower. So, and I mean, like here is really some of the amazing things that also happened. Like, let's say, like, we want a higher quality image, so we should use 4 steps. And let's use my favorite prompt, which is a photo of a colorful model. Okay, let's start from that. Okay, so this is the image. Let's find some interesting feature, like this is one that I just think makes an amazing effect. So now we generate a photo of a giraffe. Here we see the features that are active. On the down block, this is the composition block. Mm-hmm. But like, I want to pick out the giraffe style. Like, it's 3718. It's kind of a shitty UI, but it does the job. 10 is kind of strong, so let's use 6. But now I can locally turn on this giraffe mm-hmm. texture. Oh, I'm in the wrong layer, so this won't do anything interesting. So this one. And you get this amazing,
Woo!
You get this local amazing effect.
I see you blacked out like the cheek and the forehead, but then on the left side of the cheek, for instance, right. It still changes.
You got it anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
but like the
amazingness of Transformers attention.
The neck doesn't get it right.
Even change the hair.
But you have bilateral symmetry. So something is like enforcing this.
Yeah.
More than, but like, I think this is as specific as the edits get. So this is already the most, like, mutating much. For example, like, another cool thing that you can do is like, very, I don't know.
That's a beautiful example. I love it. And that's the style layer. That's one you call the style layer.
Yeah. Let's do a bit more. Just because I love this stuff. Let's do like, let's get some hairy textures. Like 4147. And let's see what happens.
You have to paint a different area.
I mean, I can
paint the hair.
So made some.
It's so cool.
Hairiness, and we can do this. We can do this on different layers, of course, right? So let me just remove this. So I found some fun stuff. Let's go to the composition block, right? So I guess, so I start with the everything is nice kind of example, and then let's go to something where things are not as nice. So 199 seems to be something with a head. Okay. 199.
In the up layer?
We go to down, and the head should be, I guess, on top. So let's apply the head intervention.
Oh, you can get a hat.
We can get a hat in the composition layer. So this is like, you know, this is how I would sell this to investors. But we are scientists, right? So let's take the beard feature or whatever.
Money anyway. We don't have much.
So, I also show you the ugly. Okay. So 4, 5, 2. Okay, let's draw a beard. A beard, I guess. So this feels like I typed the wrong number.
No.
Okay, then let's make it a bit stronger. This is like, this is unheard of. This is really ugly. This is like the demo failing. Oh yeah, we need a really high number this time. I don't know why.
Doing something with her cheeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, no. Okay.
Oh, wow.
So we were fooled. It's not a beard. It's a manliness or something.
Great. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
It was not a beard.
Interesting.
So you need to be careful with your interpretations. Right. But like now let's do something really, really cool. And so now, like, this is the stuff you only see when you do this research. And so now we take like the detail layer, and it also has something that does something with the beard, right? 3, 7, 4, 2. And now we get like really the weirdness. So this is the layer that we found. This is context dependent, but it also can be very strong. And it kind of makes sense, but it makes something that you would never get otherwise. Right.
Oh, what is this? How is this one different from the previous?
I think it was different. It turned it or it turned to a man.
This is
like
layer?
Much more local. Oh, yeah, wait, different, so layer. Different layer. Yeah.
Very
like
nice.
This one like gave her a beard, but she's still a woman facial structure.
But last time it didn't even like it. It creates some hairiness, whatever. But
perfect.
Like
perfect.
So this example is actually better. And what I got last time. Let me just download this.
We'll put this one in the paper.
Burn some of the colorful paint into hair.
Yeah, like let's try a different strength. I think you know sometimes I write photo with F, sometimes with PH. So now it's not strong enough, I guess.
Interesting.
So it's interesting. It's like a step change with strength here.
Yeah.
Like at a particular strength, she just has a full beard suddenly.
Yeah. So everything that I show you guys is heavily cherry picked. Oh, now I have what I had last time. So, yeah. This is it.
So is this still going through peer review? Is that right?
Yeah.
Did you submit it to
They keep telling us some stupid stuff like
what are they complaining about? Because it's quite important work, I think.
You are doing such a general technique, but you only have one model. And I'm like, dude, you know how much work this was? Like
sure.
This was like multiple months, everybody full time staring at these mm-hmm. features, and they're like, oh, you should do another model. I mean, yeah, sure I can, but you know, I also have a life. And things, but I think it's a good scientific standard to ask for multiple models.
It's a good standard,
but
but it's also, I think it's an important finding.
Yeah,
it's really nice.
Yeah, yeah. So if we had more manpower, I mean, now we are looking at Flux, and maybe at some point we decide to train SAEs on Flux.
Yeah, why not?
Because
GPU
Flux. Doesn't have like this nice units of analysis as you have it here.
Because of the structure,
how is Flux different architecture?
I mean, like, Flux is a diffusion transformer, and
so without the unit,
it doesn't have like this. Oh, you have like this down to one block.
Right. Because you have like, I was complaining about dimensionality reduction, and it's like, oh, actually, yeah, inside the unit, you've got this nice dimensionality reduction, which is good.
Yeah.
And so Flux, you're worried that doesn't have this.
Well, I mean, like, at least, like, we trained on Pixar, PixArt or something. We get interpretable features, just, you know, like in our paper, we write the story about the layer specialization.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot yet tell this story, I guess.
Mm. But you don't have to, right?
Yeah.
I guess if the reviewers say, hey, we just want to be sure that it works for different models, then you can have...
Well, it's literally in the appendix. So, like, I mean, the reviews are like really low scores, which is why I'm kind of butthurt about it. Yeah.
Okay, just for the
it can be fixed.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, for the academic peer review.
Yeah.
It's the opposite of
but it. Like in the paper, this doesn't come out. You know, I can do random things that I mean, you know, like
right. So somehow you have to communicate the robustness of it quantitatively.
Yeah.
Right. So
yeah. And that's hard.
Yeah.
That's actually a hard task.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe one thing is to highlight this, like, image editing application.
Oh, yeah. So also, I take kind of a little bit of the blame on that one. So, like, I didn't penetrate this space yet. This is my first work in this area. And, like, I grew up, got trained by reading machine learning papers where you do, like, a quantitative analysis over huge data sets to make your points, right? And that turned out to be really hard here. But like, we can do some, you know, smaller stuff that shows more of the highlights. But I just, you know, didn't, when we wrote this paper, I just didn't have this skill of writing the paper in this way. Yeah. But so I think the paper actually highly undersells what we're doing.
Yeah, hang out with computer vision people a little bit more.
Right.
Yeah.
I should learn how they write.
There's a certain culture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to learn this way of writing, and then I think they will also love it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. Cool. This is a great result.
Right, it's by far the best thing that I ever was part of.
Yeah.
So, by
the pictures are so fun.
By like you know, by far. So, this is like when I had the first results, I was literally going to David like I was going to random people at the conference like,
look at this.
We did this, you know, and everybody was like, wow, you know, this is so wild.
So, I think that when you go through some of the technical details, it makes it even more clear how interesting it is, because some of these things, you know, it's like well known that you can achieve some of these effects at the cross attention to text and so on, which is not that surprising because that's very close.
You guys just did everything already.
The objective, right?
So you saw everything already.
Yeah.
You're way too cool. Yeah. You're like, you're a baby in this space, man. Right. You're
like, but actually, you're finding things that are very interesting. Yeah. At the certain layers in these models. So one question is, a couple questions. So just detailed questions. So you've got, your 2-to-1 expansion goes to about 2,500 features. What do you think? Like, just from your intuition, about what percentage of those do you think are human and understandable?
Depends on the block. A good percent, like the down block, I would say like a good percentage, maybe. And now I'm improvising because I don't have the
just your data. Intuition.
Down block, I would say like 50% plus.
Half of them? Uh-huh.
Something like that. I mean, detail block is very hard to say, but I would maybe say similar but slightly less. Mid block, I already complained, it's very hard to make sense of, so maybe 1-5% or something.
Yeah.
And the style block is also again very interpretable, like
50%.
Yeah, 50, 60. I would maybe down in style, maybe let's crank them up to 50, 60.
Yeah.
Let's say detail 40.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not perfect.
No.
And like if you increase the expansion factor, you will have like
that's a huge number.
Yeah.
That's 3,000 sliders or something
Like
that, right?
Yeah, because we give you a huge design space to play around with and to customize your forward passes. And something like where maybe I could need your Android's help because I am not super solid on the math, on all of the nitty gritty details. But like there is work, right? Turbo Edit that uses Turbo to do image editing and just, you know, doing a clever trick so you don't even need training, like to construct like this score function.
Yeah.
And that would be just much cooler combining it with this.
Yes.
And so I could edit my own face in the demo.
Yes. That would be cool.
That would be next level cool.
Yeah.
And I want to have it, but like I always look at the paper and get scared. And I'm like, I need somebody. to help me with this.
Well, some of these things will just transfer without you having to do anything. It'll be the same direction.
Yeah.
On a fine-tuned model. And
I want the image editing.
Right.
I think that's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just cooler. So
have you tried transferring some of these features to the base model, maybe
57 model? Should work, but we didn't. Yeah.
And can you compose these features?
Yeah. So I had my own UI that was like a website that I hacked together with like bribing GPT.
Yeah.
But like, I was the only person who ever was able to run this because it was such a mess. But where I also could compose features, and we have like one of this in our appendix. You can compose them. It's really cool. And so the meeting recording thing blocks me from typing stuff. So let me try to pull out the link somehow else. Yeah, I think there. It's buried, I guess. Okay, so this is the other model. It didn't even. Did this even make it into the appendix? Here. Look, here I combine a few of the style layer interventions, and you know, I combine like some tiger texture with some giraffe, with some 4955. I don't know what that was. 4955. Let's check it out. 4955.
This is very exciting, Chris. Thanks for the very clear presentation.
Thanks for the many questions. Yeah, so this was a Leo card, 4955.
So what separates concepts from style? For example, you have a picture of a woman, and you try to apply all of the concepts of a tiger. At one point, the woman will turn into a tiger.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. You will have a chimera. Can you teach me this word? Can somebody just say the proper word?
I don't know. How do you say it?
You're saying it. Chimera? The way you can say it. Chimera. Say chimera or
chimera.
Chimera.
Yeah,
chimera.
No matter how you say it.
You can get a chimera. No, but you know deciphering thing. So
no matter how you say it, it's gonna still sound European. So
you remember that deciphering thing?
Yeah.
Deshivering, deep learning. Hey David, I'm gonna do this postdoc on deshivering deep learning. He is like, what?
What's
deshivering? You do what?
That's a new technical term that we haven't learned yet.
You have to interact with some.
It won't be so cold anymore. Deshivering.
So the difference here is this will never turn into a giraffe on this layer, no matter how much you crank up the stretch.
Also, like, how much can you crank up the strength? 100, 5,000?
Like, surprisingly much.
5,000? Then
I mean, I guess you still have normalization layers in there, right? So at some point, you just overpower everything else.
But okay, if you add 5,000, then you are kind of like, even if it goes to normalization, it is kind of like
dominates.
Suppressing everything else.
Everything else, it's like turning everything else to zero.
Then what happens?
Well, then it's very similar to this visualization where we turn everything else to zero and only the one thing on.
Okay.
Like the empty prompt.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Experiment.
Yeah. It's similar to that, I guess.
It'd be fun for this to be like a brush tool in Photoshop or something where you like, you know, just select.
I mean, that would be super amazing, which is why we have everything open source. All of our SDEs are on Hugging Face. Yeah. We have a nice repo, a slim repo. It's like one file that you need to apply them. We also give you the training, which we copied from somebody else who open sourced everything. SDXL is open source and amazing. I guess you have some problems there if you are like Adobe, because this was trained on Lion images. So you maybe don't want some of this in your product. Yeah, so maybe you have to retrain it.
I guess one issue is that you want it to be more controllable, like you want to be able to, like, right?
Oh yeah,
and unbounded.
Yeah, so I guess if it's supposed to be a product, you have like these weird requirements, and you are not like me, who is like, I get actually excited, you know, if by the weirdness.
Yeah.
So, like.
Artists will love the weirdness as well. It's great.
Yeah.
Yes. I think it's good. As long as it's predictable and controllable.
Yeah, I mean, look at regular users, you just lock them into the style layer. You're like, okay, you can play with this. And everybody else can, you know, you can maybe turn on like the developer mode or artist mode. And yeah, I don't know. But like, would be cool to make more of this and make it better. And also not obvious, honestly, not really obvious what are the directions that really make it better. Yeah. I guess better models, that's the obvious one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a really obvious one. Yeah, like another idea that I had, you also have like text to video models now, and like there was like this website Pika AI, and they at some point they launched like five or something, you know, interventions that you can perform on your videos, like the foreground object gets picked up and squeezed. Mm-hmm. I imagine if you just train SAEs on these video models, you get like more than five.
What are the best open weight video models? Are there any
out there? Would have to do my homework, but there are some.
Joanna, would you
like Mochi or Denmo?
Are any of them good?
I think there's some that are pretty good.
And about how large are they? How many billion parameters? Or?
Oh, I'm not sure, but I think for the Mochi one, at least you would need like a
100,
maybe.
Oh,
that's okay. But yeah, so for that there are some roadblocks, right? If we were like, oh, SAE is the thing that we really, really want, right? There you need the multiple time steps thing, I assume, and probably you need some other things as well. So it's definitely hard. Like it gets like a much harder task.
But it might not. I mean, we see that over multiple time steps, it works the same as.
Well, but it's just four, right? It's four.
I know. So it's not that much.
Yeah, better. So we should maybe try this feature on the like 20 step SDXL.
Yeah.
But like I think you saw some promising results for that, right? In the prompting attention layers with like different prompts at different heads. And you don't really narrow down the time steps much.
Yeah.
Right? And it does cool stuff.
Right. So any feature you find in single time step, easily transfer to multi time steps.
That's your intuition.
Yeah, all there
empirically.
Are, empirically, yeah. There.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, that's really cool.
So I won't be surprised if you can just transfer these to 50 step and then you see we solve
at the same time. Well, we should definitely do this.
Yeah.
It would be so easy. It's the same architecture. It's everything the same. No, it's like this is, should literally work out of the box by writing SDXL instead of SDXL Turbo into our.
We should do it on a video. It would be very, very striking.
So the thing that's really interesting is you didn't use any spatial features. You with only the channel dimension, you were able to get these features out
in
single time step, which probably would transfer to multi time step. So for videos, I wonder if you just use a single frame.
So doing also the most naive way.
Yeah, just a naive way.
Start.
Just a naive thing. Exactly. And then it might just generalize.
That bring out physics out of the model.
Yes. I mean, that's also what that was would be our questions. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we were very curious about video, and you have like these game simulator models that are so cool. Like. Mm-hmm. That's just so cool. Those are maybe even better and smaller.
There's so, an NVIDIA. Sorry.
So the other opportunity you have, right, is since it's like, you know, I feel like this is a potentially better test bed for sort of the interpretability, the interpretable disentanglement question than some of the LLM test beds. Is this L0 regularized, L1 regularized, SAEs, is it really the best way of getting disentanglement out of this? Or, you know, is this a good test bed for other people to try other disentanglement?
Oh, you mean approaches? Turbo?
Yeah, I think Turbo is a great,
yeah.
It's a good setting.
I like the idea,
If you're able to make a...
This keeps bothering me, honestly.
If you're able to make an automated benchmark of interpretability, then it's like a natural setting to test alternatives, right?
How would you score it?
Like alternative architecture?
SAE bench for...
SAE bench, right? So it's another... Throw it into SAE bench. It should be part of it, right? Yeah, so...
There are like these classic data sets, right? Where you have a scene with a bunch of different colored objects. Maybe we could start with something narrow like that.
And just see, you know, how...
Yeah.
Maybe something like that.
Yeah.
Is there a way we could push for the rest of the features to also be interpretable? I don't know.
Kind of inspired by the recent talk that we had here last week where
it went up and down the hierarchy.
Where the speaker did like the SAE stitching.
Yes.
So, I mean, you can start from a small SAE, which is kind of has these causal features. And then you could see, you could try to add. So we have like this result, like the larger SAEs, they are kind of harder to work with, but they also find like different features sometimes. Mm-hmm. So maybe we could stitch together some something that contains like all of the ones that are great from different expansion factors.
Maybe it's as simple
as... Is it possible to do it with some objective other than L1 or like in addition to...
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. We had some cool ideas recently. And yeah, I think so. I think there are so many things that you could try and so many better classical methods than this linear SAE thing. So that to me, the SAE, you know, is just a dream. It's like the dream of the simple world and the dream of the neural network doing something nice for us, like and using somehow the only, you know,
why are you
using the sparsity thing that we actually can implement.
Yeah.
And
it's the delivery.
So I'm curious what more deeper autoencoders do with activations, with the intermediate results. And we had some ideas how to, you know, actually combine the good things of SAEs, which is the combinatorial argument kind of makes sense. with the more powerful autoencoders. Because you definitely don't want to just do like an autoencoder that reduces the dimensionality, because like there's still a combinatorial argument. Already, like the model was too small. Now the model divided by two for sure is also too small, right? Unless you narrow down your distribution, right? Which was the setting where the autoencoders actually were conceived. And using these ideas, I think you can get it to work. I don't want to like throw out the whole idea, but this is the key intuition why you could get like something like a variational autoencoder also to do something cool in here, something nonlinear cool by narrowing down the distribution of prompts. And then you could do this multiple times. And then you would also have you would have interpretable nonlinear features after that, that you kind of farmed in this, I don't know, kind of not fully unsupervised way, but because you had to group the prompts. Right. But maybe you can combine it with other ideas.
Yeah. It's a architecture question. You can.
Yeah. But like, I mean, we saw in Nikhil's work, we saw in Rohit's work, PCA is actually already extremely powerful if your distribution is narrow, right? If your distribution is a single prompt with different noises, PCA was literally all you need. Or if your distribution is this one theory of mind template, PCA is all you need, right? So that's a really that's something really interesting, I think. In hindsight, it makes sense, but in advance, it's maybe, you know, something you wouldn't expect.
Sort of local linearity.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Chris.
What a great presentation.
Yeah. Thank you for the great
So.